Hey, this is Brock.
This is Leslie.
And this is Genevieve. We would like to welcome you back to Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping Podcast. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a quick rating and review so our little Vegas food show can continue to grow and get noticed. We really appreciate your support. You can also subscribe to Las Vegas Weekly's YouTube channel and catch the podcast there. And you can find past episodes at lasvegasweekly.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.
So last month, the Second Helping crew was invited to the Cosmopolitan, specifically to the Click Lounge, to be judges for the Late Night Industry Chef Battle, a slightly rowdy cooking competition featuring four local chefs. It was a little bit like the Food Network show Chopped. There were three rounds of competition and a basket full of secret ingredients to challenge these guys and test their skills. The chefs competing that night were Nicasio Martinez from Fit Fuel Meal Prep, Pedro Sanchez from 550 Pizza Bar at Aria, David Mangual from Hyde Lounge at T-Mobile Arena, and John Van Heusen from Nice Touch Catering. All different chefs who do different things for vastly different companies around town, which led to a very diverse group of dishes for us to sample. All four did a great job of showcasing their own individual style, and the secret ingredients were actually pretty crazy, especially in the final dessert round. Check it out.
All right, let's unveil these secret ingredients. Uh-oh. Oh my God, no.
I don't know if you can put the mushrooms in that.
Have you seen those? Bro, I saw those at 99 Ranch. I got so excited. Not because of the shape, but because they were great. Oh, man. Rambutan, passion fruit, finger grapes, which was my nickname in high school, and enoki mushrooms.
That's not a bad mushroom.
I think those mushrooms accidentally fell in there, but hey, why not?
So both of you had quite the reaction to those enoki mushrooms coming out of that basket, and that's because the chefs were making a cake-based dessert for that round, and obviously mushrooms, not the standard cake ingredient, but those desserts were pretty good. I enjoyed everything that we ate.
I did too. In fact, I think that dessert was the winner.
Yeah. If I remember, it was like peanut butter and Oreos and kind of had like this funnel cake quality. It was really delicious.
And it was also kind of crunchy on top.
That was amazing. I couldn't detect mushroom. I don't remember where the mushroom was, but obviously, you can hear an audible ew from all of us. And I think it's just funny considering when you watch Chopped at home, you know, there's always like one mystery ingredient that throws everything off. And you don't think the judges have to eat that. Like, what if it's terrible? So it was just kind of fun to think about that and kind of be in the driver's seat, so to speak.
Maybe he threw the mushrooms away. And he didn't even use
I remember where the mushrooms were. They were on top. He torched it. So it was the crunchy.
That was the crunchy.
Right.
Oh,
that was
okay.
The mushroom on top.
Who would have thought peanut butter, Oreos, and mushrooms would go together?
It works.
So well.
So our experience judging the chef battle inspired the theme of this month's episode as we decided to look in the mirror a little bit and explore what it's like to be a food critic in Las Vegas. When we came up with the theme, I knew I wanted to go somewhere accessible, somewhere that all of our listeners could relate to. After all, as food critics, we find ourselves eating at places that we wouldn't really typically be able to afford, and that's not the real world. So we settled on Crack Shack, the new fast casual chicken spot at Park MGM. Whether you're partial to the sold-out chicken sandwich at Popeyes, which I still never got to try, or you can afford to drop $94 on a roast chicken at Nomad, we can all appreciate the versatile amazingness that is chicken done right. Genevieve, what did you think about Crack Shack?
I really loved it. That was the first time I've been to Crack Shack, and I'd heard such good things about it from both of you. Fried chicken seems like a simple thing to do, but it's actually really hard to find a good one, and it's always so nice when you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one of the things I try to keep in mind when I'm writing about food is accessibility, which I think Crack Shack, obviously it's a little bit on the spendier side for fast casual food, but it still kind of hits that anyone can go there. So many of the places we write about are on the Strip, so it's important to keep a balance of local mom-and-pop places in the mix. A few issues ago, I wrote about birria, a popular Mexican stew that's taking Vegas by storm. Genevieve, what's one of your favorite mom-and-pop places to eat at?
So right now, I'm really obsessed with everything that's opening at Shanghai Plaza in Chinatown. I love Weira Thai, and I don't know if you've ever been there, but there's the original location is near Palace Station in Sahara, I think. But this one at Shanghai Plaza is excellent. The curries are so good. It reminds me a lot of when I went to Thailand last year. It feels really authentic to me. So right now, that's my obsession. I want to go have Thai food every day.
Do you have a favorite curry?
I love Penang curry.
Okay.
I love all of them, but yeah, that's probably my go-to.
Nice. And then you lived in New York before you came to Vegas, and we all know the food scene there is obviously incredible. So I'm curious, how did you get into food writing?
Well, I come from a family of amazing cooks. Both my parents cooked, and my sister went to culinary school. Because I don't cook myself, I kind of live vicariously through people who do and those people who write about it. In New York, everyone is obviously food obsessed. We all read the Times food section and relish good and bad reviews. New York Magazine's Grub Street, you probably read it online, is kind of like the Bible for figuring out what to eat that weekend. Some of the best writing I've ever read is about food. And since I can't cook, writing about it is the next best thing.
Definitely. I know I've gotten pickier as I've written about food longer. I don't know if that's exactly the right word. I've definitely gotten more discerning. And if there's a meal that I'm eating at a fancy place, it's probably going to take more to wow me. Like I think about things, you know, where is it sourced from? What's the presentation like? And one of my biggest pet peeves is an overzealous menu. Like writing, I think some restaurants could really benefit from having an editor. Do you have any pet peeves?
Honestly, it takes a lot to disappoint me. Part of it may be because, like I said, I don't cook. So when someone presents food in front of me, I'm like immediately impressed. There's so much creativity that goes into cooking that I literally don't know how to achieve something like that. And as a writer, at least I can describe it in a way that's accessible to me and to a reader. But I don't know the first thing about putting something together like that. So I guess I'm easily impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I definitely can feel dumbfounded sometimes, and there was definitely a learning curve when I first started writing about food. And ultimately, I still try not to take things too seriously. And that isn't to say that the food and beverage industry isn't a serious business. Obviously, it's a very serious business. But I feel like as writers, it's our job to, you know, relay what's new and delicious and keep it kind of fun. And perhaps write about the things that shouldn't be overlooked and to really convey the hard work that goes into making, you know, dining out an experience. And then some of my favorite food stories aren't really even about the food itself. They're about the chefs who pour their heart and soul into their food. Like, I really love the feature you did about women chefs in Vegas.
Yeah, that was such a fun story to put together. You really get a sense that these chefs are really passionate about what they do. And I totally agree with you. Long after you've digested the meal, you don't remember the food so much, but you remember the story the chef may have told you about it. I remember Jamie Tran of The Black Sheep telling us that food to her is how she knew her mother loved her. And I feel the same way. When my mom made food for us, it was the purest expression of her love.
I love that. That's so sweet. Before we wrap things up, are there any restaurants you're dying to try as we enter the final months of 2019?
I am so looking forward to Major Domo Meat and Fish opening at Palazzo. I don't know the exact date it's opening, but I know it's very, very soon. I'm a huge fan of David Chang's. I think he's such a risk taker when it comes to flavor, but his food is a lot of fun too. So, Brock, you went out with our esteemed food writer, Jim Bagley, for some delicious food at Mordeo. You both have been doing this food writing for a very long time. We'd love to hear about your institutional knowledge when it comes to food writing.
I've been doing it for too long of a time, some would say. That's why I'm retired. No, I'm kind of semi-retired. I don't really write restaurant reviews anymore. But I still do write about restaurants for Las Vegas Weekly sometimes. And the Las Vegas Sun, and of course I get to come on Second Helping with you and talk all about it. And yeah, Jim has been doing it for Las Vegas Weekly just as long as me, which I didn't realize. I've been I've been writing for Weekly for 10 years this year, and Begley started doing it later on that same year, so we thought it would be nice to go out to lunch and talk about our approach to food writing and being a food critic and covering this industry in Las Vegas. And we went to one of his favorite spots, Mordeo, to try out their lunch offering, which is pretty fantastic. I highly recommend you go check out this kind of power lunch thing they're doing at Mordeo right now. So my favorite thing about you, one of my favorite things about you writing about food and being a critic is that you are kind of going to go do this anyway, no matter what. And the writing about it and the judging it is just like something that happens independent of all that. You're going to go to all the restaurants. You're going to try them. You're going to tell people which ones you like. Your many friends, your huge social circle, where they should go to eat. And the writing part is kind of secondary, because that's just how you've been doing it.
It's actually funny you should mention that, because it's gonna be going on 10 years that I've been writing, which is kind of crazy. But I've been in town now for 17, and so those first 7 years, literally people would call me and they'd say, "Hey, I'm on this side of town, I'm looking for Italian." And I'd say, "Well, hit this place and get this dish, or go to this place and get that dish," right? And so in the early days, I kind of looked at the writing as just kind of an extension of my social network, except instead of having, you know, a couple hundred people to talk to, then I had a distribution of like 70,000. And so it
doubled
kind of
your
amplified, needless to say.
It doubled your exposure.
Exactly. And so right, yeah, the funny thing is in the early days, I had 7 years of backlog to kind of work off of. Now I don't have quite as much. In addition to the fact that everything else, I'm just so much busier, but it's still great to go around exploring and find hidden gems. You know, as has been always been kind of one of my go-tos, one of my fortes, and you know, looking for those little mom and pop shops off the beaten path.
Can we talk about your actual day job for a second? Because
sure.
that does kind of fuel. In a way, it does kind of fuel your discovering restaurants and going to new places in particular, right?
Yeah. Well, so I'm an engineer by day, and you know, being an engineer definitely has its perks. We have 5 offices, and so I get to travel quite a bit for business, which gives me a lot of exposure to a lot of cuisine outside of the Vegas scene. And I'm pretty grateful for that. So not everybody gets to travel with work, and I do. And then it also right the. I always like to joke that it's the engineering that allows me to write, because needless to say, as you know, being a writer is something you have to be very dedicated to, because it is not the most it doesn't necessarily provide you with
it pays
a multitude
bad.
Of dollars. Exactly.
You're being very diplomatic. The pay is garbage.
Yes. Whereas being an engineer, I can basically go out and go, I you know, having a successful engineering firm, it kind of provides me the opportunity to go wherever I want when I want. So I, you know, both locally and elsewhere. And so it's nice, right? So I can check out a bunch of places, and I'm not as a freelancer, I'm not beholden to necessarily having to write. And so I like to write about, and I've gotten criticism about this over the years, but I like to write about places that are worth writing about. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Yelp does a good job at killing bad restaurants, but Yelp also doesn't necessarily promote the best restaurants, particularly when it comes to ethnic specialties, and in particular, non-Asian ethnic restaurants. I don't think Yelp gets does a good job of amply reflecting those restaurants, particularly here in Vegas. Now, it can be much different in different cities, you know, where there's more diversity from an ethnic standpoint. But I'll tell you, right? Like I've traveled up and down Lake Mead, and there are a ton of great Mexican joints that literally get no exposure whatsoever. Right. One of my absolute favorite finds of all time, El Menudazo. It had two Yelp reviews when I first found it. Two Yelp reviews. That is, it's a travesty that a place that's that good had no exposure, literally didn't exist on the internet. Didn't have a website. Right. Didn't have any exposure on Yelp.
Most places never have websites.
Exactly. Most of the best places don't have websites. And so it's funny. So I've always taken it to be my position that people should be reading what I write about if they want to find things that are good. And if you like my style might not be for everybody. Now, granted, I eat a lot of everything, but the fact of the matter is I like edgy cuisine, I like ethnic cuisine, I, over the years, have grown to like spicy cuisine. I am not a chicken guy. I mean, it has to be really good chicken for me to want to go ahead and write about chicken. But in general,
if you're saying that some chicken is great, then we should all drop what we're doing and go eat that chicken.
Probably damn good chicken.
Absolutely. One of the reasons that you and I work together so well and like to work together is because we kind of share a philosophy or an approach, which is to really try to get off the beaten path, discover stuff that people don't know about, and to showcase food and restaurants that we think are great, but also to kind of not shine a light on places that aren't, because we don't want to waste the space and the time to trash a place. If it's not worth it, it's kind of like let's ignore that place because it's not worth sending our readers to, sending our friends to, and whatever happens with that. When I started at Weekly, I kind of took that approach. I brought that approach. I wanted to get away from the more traditional New York Times style of writing a restaurant review and putting a star rating on it. Remember, there were star ratings when I started at Weekly.
Oh, there were right before I started.
Yeah. And those went away. And I don't think those are... I just think that's a different way of doing things, and maybe that time is over. But did you... once you started writing so much, did that change the way that you order? How much did that alter your dining out experience once you made that leap?
Well, so it's interesting because in Vegas, I feel the need to always be on, because I never know what I'm going to be writing about next. And so every restaurant I go into, every piece of food I eat, outside of the stuff in my own house and in friends' places, I'm always thinking about, okay, is this something that our readers would like to know? And so I'm always kind of on. And it's one of the reasons I love traveling so much, because when I travel, I don't have to be on. I mean, I still want great food, looking at trends and looking and seeing how maybe necessarily that reflects back to Vegas. But I don't have to be judging every meal I have to determine whether or not a place is going up and down in some kind of pecking order, and whether or not it's somewhere we need to be directing people to. So that's 100% how things have changed, is that I'm always kind of judging things. And frankly, I've been doing it long enough now. I also have to try to judge in certain places whether or not what I'm getting is representative of what the rest of the room is getting. I mean, mean, I do my best to stay anonymous, but, you know, you're in a business for 10 years and you make friends and they know people. And the fact of the matter is I enjoy being an adjunct to the F&B community in this town. I mean, it's one of the reasons why 10 years ago we decided to stay in town, because we had so many friends. And that was even before I was writing. And I love being a part of the F&B community. I think it makes a small city even smaller. And we're a tight-knit group. As you know, Vegas is a tough city to live in. So we've all had our share of friends that have come and gone because they've given in to any of the vices that all of us have, and some of us control them and others don't. And so we've got any number of friends that have gone because of gambling, or because of drugs or alcohol or sex or all of the above. And so I think those of us, and I think you could make the argument that in the F&B community that there's even more, it's even a more prevalent issue, because there are a lot of people that take food and drinks to the extreme in our industry. So those of us that are left, I think you develop a tight bond. And so I know a lot of people, as do you. You just kind of can't help it over the years. And so I'm also kind of judging all the time, okay, is the table next to me kind of getting the same service? And I really take to heart when people tell me stories of bad service or bad food in places that I truly love, because it makes me wonder. And so I try to fly under the radar as much as possible, and I still do it on the strip quite a bit, but it's getting tougher. You get to the point that you know so many people, and you know, as a social butterfly like yourself is aware.
I've never been called a butterfly before.
Okay, we had to take a break to scarf an amazing truffle burger and trout
and Bear Blanc. Mordeo's my new business lunch spot.
It should be.
This is a great choice, Jim Begley. Since I'm not a food critic guy anymore, I still dabble, but I don't do it as often. It's kind of nice. I'm kind of enjoying being a regular person, going to eat wherever I want, going back to the same place every week if I feel like doing that, and like not having to go try new places. And I also do not miss eating on the strip all the time. Which is funny, because I used to always tell everybody, you have to go to the strip. This place is worth it. I know it's expensive. I know it's a hassle to get there, but you have to go. And now I kind of feel like, I'd just as soon hit my neighborhood spot. It takes a lot to get me to go to the strip at this point.
Well, I will say that the implementation of paid parking has made it much more difficult for strip adventures. The flip side is, though, is that rideshare has pretty much effectively wiped it out to a degree. Because, you know, with the availability of rideshare now, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to drive to the strip. And so kind of where paid parking and unpaid parking is almost kind of immaterial for me because of how far we live from the strip. But you're about the same. I mean, if I lived up in the northwest part of the valley, different story. If I lived down in Henderson, once again, different story. But right, because we're $15 trip to the strip, man, I you can hardly make the argument not to ride share anymore. And those nights, I mean, every once in a while a schedule doesn't allow and you end up on the strip, and then that gets a little bit difficult, right? But if you know how to circumvent well enough, valet at Mandalay Place, valet at Crystals, get you access to most everywhere you need. Now that Venetian has never had paid parking. Wynn doesn't have paid parking. We'll see where the other chips fall at this point. But
you should be parking where it's free and walking a little extra anyway, so that you can walk off whatever ridiculous food you just ate.
You gotta get your steps in.
Which brings me to another point. When you tell people that you are a food writer or a food critic in Las Vegas, do they still freak out and say, oh, that must be the best job ever.
Yeah, well, so it's so funny, right? So I've been a fire protection engineer for my whole professional career, right? So damn near 30 years of being a fire protection engineer, nobody could care. People couldn't care less. The minute I became
nobody
a food writer,
your stories yeah. from
I mean, the minute engineer. I became a food writer, man, I was the belle of the ball. And, you know, that's understandable. I mean, let's face it. Being a food writer is, it's fun. It's cool. I feel blessed that the path that led me to start my own company simultaneously led me to become a food writer. And I couldn't be happier. It's been a great 10 years. And I'm looking forward to 10 more, at least.
There's not really any bad things about that particular gig in Las Vegas, but
weight gain, you do cholesterol.
Have, right, you do have to watch that stuff.
Yep.
It is super fun to go out and get the treatment, as it were, and have these amazing chefs cook for you all night and create special things. It's a lot of food, though. You do have to. I wasn't very far into it when I realized, okay, there's a mode that's called the one bite mode where you shift into that and you're really just tasting everything because you do get too much food sent out to you.
Yeah, my problem is I grew up in a middle class household where you didn't waste food. And so I am intrinsically trained to finish plates. And that has been very, very tough for me to pull back from. And it's still to this very day. I mean, partly because of that's in the back of my mind, partly because I want to show I don't want to be disrespectful to chefs. I mean, the flip side is chefs have no boundaries when it comes to portion control. Like, you can ask them to go ahead and send you out small portions or bite-sized tastes, and they also couldn't care less. It falls on deaf ears to say the very least.
How much better is it when you go out to eat? How much better is it when you go out to eat and I'm there?
Exponentially? Yeah. 6 to 8 times better. Roughly.
This episode of Second Helping is also brought to you by the Silverton Hotel and Casino, just south of the Las Vegas Strip on Blue Diamond Road and home of one of Las Vegas' favorite happy hours at Mi Casa Grill and Cantina, with some of the neighborhood's best Mexican food, 85 varieties of tequila, and specials like $3 tacos every day from 5 to 7 p.m. It's easy to see why Mi Casa has been a true locals' favorite for years. We at Las Vegas Weekly just made the sensational discovery of the restaurant within the restaurant at Mi Casa, and that's the fantastic sushi bar, Su Casa. Here you will find your favorite sashimi, nigiri, and sushi rolls, along with ceviche, poke bowls, sushi burritos, and other coastal Mexican dishes. My favorite is the soft-shell crab, and that dish is on Su Casa's happy hour menu. That's right, Su Casa has its own happy hour, also from 5 to 7 p.m., with sushi specials and small plates all under $10, like togarashi spiced pork rinds and a unique take on oysters Rockefeller. The chefs at Su Casa are always coming up with new dishes, and it even has a 3-course chef's tasting menu, a great way to introduce yourself to this really creative cuisine. Next time you're in the neighborhood, check out Su Casa at the Silverton, and you can get more info right now at silvertoncasino.com.
That brings us to my favorite part of Second Helping, where we all talk about the best thing we eat this month. The other day, I tried out La Monja. Is that how you say it? La Monja?
I think so.
Okay. I went there with Weekly staff writer Cindy Reed, and they have this dish that's basically a spin on elote, otherwise known as Mexican street corn. And what's cool about La Monja's version is that they use baby corn. It's super cute, it's really delicious, and you don't have to worry about getting corn stuck in your teeth, so it's a win-win. And then lastly, Sparrow and Wolf rolled out its new menu, and everything on there is delicious, but the thing that stuck out most to me was their scallops with mole, which when I first heard the words mole and scallop together, I did not think that was going to be good, and I was pleasantly surprised it's smoky and the mole is super creamy, and it actually paired together really well. So that was my favorite thing.
That sounds really good. It's mole and scallop, I think that's a great combination.
I mean, so does Brian Howard. So you would both be right.
I think La Monja is now the first restaurant to make it into the best things that we ate twice, because I did that a little while back.
Really?
I had a dish there loved also. Yeah, maybe. Maybe we just keep talking about the same places. It was kind of a ceviche-style dish, but it was all vegetables.
Oh, okay.
It was mostly tomatoes, but just I love the food there. I really need to go back there.
It's really good. There's ceviche. I still have to go try it. Yeah, definitely go.
Well, I had some awesome food last month. I had a really, really memorable multi-course dinner at the Edge Steakhouse at Westgate, and everything was so good there, I think it would be too hard to choose just one dish that stands out. I ate everything on the menu pretty much at Graffiti Bao, and same thing, everything is really good there. But my one favorite dish would have to be the spicy pork dumplings at Tim Ho Wan at the Palms. My wife Maria and I went to eat there for the first time, and we are actually really apprehensive about it because a couple of years ago we traveled to Shanghai to visit some friends and stayed there for a week and had the most amazing time and ate the most amazing food. And it was a really big turning point for us because I love Chinese food. That's one of my favorite things to eat. And Maria, not so much. It's always hard to convince her to go to a Chinese restaurant. But after she tried so many different dishes while we were in China, amazing dumplings and Sichuan food she really loved, she's developed her own love of this cuisine. And now she's really eager to kind of find the best versions of all of her favorite dishes here in Las Vegas. So we had probably unfair expectations when we went to Tim Ho Wan, and overall it really delivered. And our consensus favorite were these dumplings in this really intense garlicky sauce. We were pretty much dipping everything else that we ordered into that sauce once we finished the dumpling. So that's a good recommendation, I think. Genevieve, it's your turn. What's the best thing that you ate?
The best thing I ate this month was actually last night at La Strega, Chef Gina Marinelli's restaurant in Summerlin. She had this special five-course Halloween menu, and one of the courses was a bone marrow served with cavatelli pasta and parsley crumbs. It was the perfect dish, if you remember last night and today. It's really cold out. And it really was like the perfect cold weather dish. The pasta was just perfectly al dente, and that, oh, how can you go wrong with bone marrow? I mean, it's just, it was beefy and delicious and creamy and buttery. It was, I will be thinking about that dish for a long time.
I really like to use cold weather as an excuse to, like, no, we can go eat pasta, as if I wasn't eating pasta all summer anyways.
I've been eating pasta at home, like, every night, so same.
Well, that's all for this episode of Las Vegas Weekly Second Helping. Thanks again for joining us, and special thanks to Click Lounge, Crack Shack, Bordeo, Jim Bagley, The Silverton, and to Sonia Barcelona for lending her song Violent Water to our show. You can hear more from Sonia at artofsonia.com. We hope you enjoy the show, and please come back for another helping in December, when we will be celebrating the holiday season with family and lots of food. See you then.